This is Black by Black, a community news program from WPPMLP 106.5 FM, where we explore issues affecting the Philadelphia area with news reports from members of the community. I'm Kennedy Scurry.
And I'm Vanessa Lowe. In the next half hour, we'll hear stories from our community news reporters about why it's important to take mental health as seriously as physical health. A long-running poetry series that's gone through some big changes over the past few years, and an environmental educator in West Philadelphia helping connect city dwellers with nature.
But first, Philadelphia will get its first WNBA team in 2030. But you won't have to wait until then to catch a professional women's basketball game in the city. Because in January, a new 3-on-3 women's basketball league called Unrivaled is bringing its first travel games to Philadelphia. Block by Block reporter Helen Hortzman Allen spoke with some of the women who helped make that happen.
Unrivaled is a new women's basketball league started by two WNBA players in 2025 that's already generating a lot of attention for its fast-paced 3-on-3 games. The Philly Sisters, an organization advocating for the power of women's sports for cities and their communities, was instrumental in bringing them to Philadelphia for a pair of back-to-back games at Xfinity Mobile Arena in South Philadelphia on January 30th, 2026. Ashley Lunkenheimer from the Philly Sisters explains how the new league was formed.
Nafisa Collier and her husband Alex Pazell were sitting around. She had to figure out whether she was going to travel abroad to support her family because she needed to earn money in the off-season. So they joined up with Brianna Stewart, and they ended up forming an off-season league to help women earn the living that they should be earning, to get equity in a league like they should be getting equity in a league, real equity, and stay in the country in the off-season.
Unrivaled launched in 2025. In their first season, they played all their games in Miami.
The women loved their 10 weeks in the same place, including practices, then the 8-week season. But they said maybe next season, in our second season, we can go one place.
My name is Alexandra Sykes, and I work for the Philadelphia Sisters. 6 years ago, my wife and I, Wanda Sykes and I, we just, you know, were tired of going to New York and, you know, LA and DC to watch games and watch women's sports. And we said, you know, hey, let's make it happen here because, you know, we see the potential. And Philadelphia is so ready for this.
So Unrivaled said, well, we're looking at New York and D.C. and, you know, San Francisco and L.A. And Wanda and Alex said, why aren't you looking at Philly? And so they took a risk because going to a city that already has a WNBA team gives it already fan base, already a mailing list, all those things, right? They didn't have that here, but they can prove more by coming to Philly that they're great. And Philly can prove more that we belong with these women's professional teams, especially in basketball.
Professional sports is more than just whether you can see a game close to home or you have to travel. It can also shape our idea of who is an athlete.
I was born in 1974, and my birth announcement actually has a picture of my dad and my mom. My dad was a big soccer player, and he's carrying a soccer ball, and a bubble's coming out of his mouth, and it literally says, maybe the next one will be a soccer player, because I was the first child and a girl, yes. And my mom and dad were giant advocates for me in sports and in life, and I said to my mom, what the heck is up with that? And she said, oh, honey, it was a different time.
Ashley's dad changed his perspective as time went on.
I actually had a club foot. And so I was in a cast till I was 7. And my dad, he said, you're never going to be fast because of your leg, but I will make you strong. My leg got stronger and stronger and stronger. And then ultimately, when I went to college, what my dad had done for me in making me strong in every other way but not fast is I ended up playing women's rugby. Women, girl athletes and girl dad want their girls. My dad didn't believe, right, that I could be a soccer player because he had no way to visualize that. The great women have always been playing, but now we're seeing them more. And then that should make us want to do even more and see them even more and bring them to our towns and go to their games.
So with Unrivaled coming to Philadelphia, it's important to the Philly Sisters that young people get to be part of it. They partnered with Philly Youth Basketball, which is organizing community events to go along with the Unrivaled matchups in January. Zuri Stone is the director of enrichment at Philly Youth Basketball.
Philly Youth Basketball is an organization that understands that Philly is a basketball town. There are courts all over this city. Alex, Wanda, Ashley are great friends of the organization, and we are actually really excited right now to be working with them to do the community event that we're hosting with the Unrivaled Energy that's coming to the city. PYB is going to be the program host for that community action and try to get a lot of young girls into our center to meet everybody, meet some of the players, and then head to the game. I really look forward to the energy that the women's sports is going to bring to our city. It's wild to think that we don't have any women's sports. For me, growing up in Philly, it helped me stay busy. It kept me out of all the other distractions that Philadelphia can bring. I think very specifically, it teaches you discipline. It teaches you teamwork. There's so many social, emotional skills. On top of that, once you're into these spaces and you find something that you love, you can use that to influence you to being even better at other things. So being an amazing athlete and being a school athlete made sure I got my grades right because I wanted to stay on the team. So I think sports is just important for youth all around. There's a lot of other things you could do, but if you choose to be an athlete, you got to take those skills off the court and know how they're transferable into the rest of your life.
As Philadelphians of all ages get a taste of women's sports in 2026, the Philly Sisters think it's just the beginning.
Women have always been playing great. They've always been great players. They've always been doing incredible things. We finally have started to get incredible traction. It's finally all happening. And we just need Philadelphia to say that we're going to support women's sports, because that's our hypothesis that we worked off of, is if we build it, literally, they will come. And I think they will.
I'm so excited about that. Philadelphia Youth Basketball actually runs programs for kindergarten through high school students. Find out more at phillyyouthbasketball.org. All right, so between work, school, and family obligations and everything else, modern life can be stressful. But there are steps you can take to help deal with that stress in your personal and professional life. My co-host, Kennedy Scurry, recently spoke with therapist Michelle Williams to find out more about how people can balance their own mental health and well-being with the need to get things done.
So, we live in a world that's always on go. How do you personally slow down enough to find your inner calm, especially when life or leadership demands are loud?
I really do live a slow type of life in general because I have to for my survival. I have hobbies, I dilly-dally. There's a lot of demands, there's a lot of pressure, but I am honest about what my capacity is. I have chronic illnesses. I have to be emotionally available for my clients. And because my work is so important to me and because the health of the therapist really does impact the therapeutic space, I have no choice but to take good care. So I don't start my day with social media. I can't. You just never know what's going to be on there. I really do practice what I preach. Like when they say, like, start your day with some movement, they're right about it. It really does make a difference. You know, so I'm going to take a fall foliage walk. Like I'm going to be in my garden. If I have time, I'm going to bake something in between sessions. Really, it's about being honest about my capacity because I don't want to be dysregulated and then show up to a space like a therapeutic space and be harmful.
The power of pause. When did you realize that stillness wasn't laziness, but actually a strength? What practices help you protect that peace daily?
I have to say, it took a lot of unlearning. I come from a busybody family where the sign of you resting is dysregulating to them. They don't understand why you're sitting down. They don't understand if there's something that always has to be done, why aren't you always doing it? And that's just not true or accurate. Like just because there is something that always has to be done doesn't mean that you always have to be doing it. It's not sustainable. We're not robots. The people who try to run and operate with no stopping sense, they find themselves sick. And so shifting the mindset from like rest being a luxury to it being a necessity is something that helped me kind of shift it away from it being lazy or something that you should be ashamed of.
I'm a person that runs because, oh, I have to get this done. I have to get that done. And I love that people, especially on social media, talk about how rest is actually productive. You know, so it's like you have to take your rest in order to function better, to think better, to talk better, things like that. So I could definitely agree.
I like that you said to think better because when you think about like what people have to do on a regular basis, like they have to pay attention, they have to make decisions, you know, they have to interact with other humans. And I don't know if you've ever met a sleep deprived person, but they don't have a lot of that. They don't have the skills. They're not able. Your body is literally sensing danger when you are operating for large periods of time without rest. So environments like that, that are inclusive of people's needs is the starting point here. But when you think about a mentally healthy space in a friend group, in a workspace, in creative spaces, then we're thinking about like how much room do people have to be their full selves? What messages are we communicating in that space? What type of topics are allowed? What kind of rules and regulations do we have in that space? And so, for example, one of the things that I've seen happen over the past few years is people in my life calling and asking if I have capacity before discussing like a topic. Consent being a big part of that dynamic really does improve the mental wellness of a space because now there's an opportunity to establish a level of safety there. The other thing that when I'm thinking about like a healthier space is the way we are grounding ourselves in information. You know, like, is this a space where we are rooting ourselves in fact? Is this a space where people can make mistakes? I know sometimes people can be very stringent with people who make mistakes. And I think that's why people are so scared to admit that they've made a mistake. And so, like, where is that space to grow and learn? Being a person who can admit mistakes and course correct, and then also creating and offering some compassion in spaces so that people can do that too. So, you know, just thinking about, are we making space for people with diverse experiences? Are we in a space where we can have accountability, where we can have open dialogue, where there's compassion, where there's grace, where we can problem solve together, and where we can assume best intentions?
Everybody has to put each other in each other's shoes. Like, you know, we have to, like, remember life is still happening.
So in 2020, that's when I got my ADHD diagnosis, and I could not perform. I was working with two mentors, and I was not making my deadlines. I was sitting in front of my computer frozen. I literally couldn't even type to fill out an invoice. I did the work. I just couldn't even fill out the invoices. And my mentors, because they're familiar with my work ethic, instead of saying like, yo, this is late, coming at me crazy, they literally were like, yo, I want to pay you for the hard work that you're doing. This isn't like you. Are you okay? And I really appreciated them as leaders because, like, of course, I was, like, holding up their operations because I couldn't get things done, which was giving me even more anxious. I'm like, these are people that I respect. These are people that I admire. Whole time, I'm, like, super navigating a huge disability, like, frozen. And that compassion really helped me gather up a little bit more capacity to be able to, like, communicate, rise to the occasion since they opened up that door, get the help that I needed, and then finish up and close out my projects the way I needed to. And I think that compassion and empathy go a lot longer than, like, punitive, judgy, critical interactions and feedback. You know, I think that one of the reasons why I train therapists is because the way that sometimes we're educated in a way that makes a lot of sense in the field are, it's a little bit of a gap there. And, you know, I just want people to feel grounded, regulated, congruent, so that when they're showing up in the therapeutic spaces, they're not oversharing, they're not overstepping, they're staying clear and connected to what the client's goals are. Because it's easy to, like, want something for somebody, but that's not what we're here for. But when you're regulated, then you can remind yourself, like, okay, this is what we can realistically accomplish in these set of circumstances. They're not here for this. Of course, I want this for them because now I'm invested and I care. But if that's not their goal, then let's work within the goal.
Arts and culture organizations across the country have seen funding cuts over the past year, but when the Philly Pigeon lost grant funding for its long-running poetry series, the group turned to the community for support. Block by Block's Campbell Simmons reports that just one of the major changes the event series has seen in recent years.
Roughly once a month, poets take the stage at Philomoka in Philly's Callow Hill neighborhood for the latest poetry show, organized by the Philly Pigeon and hosted by Jacob Winterstein and Philadelphia Poet Laureate Kai Davis.
Black as ink, they can't erase me. You want me to die, then make me. No, I won't say no, I won't go and forsake the pain that made me. I will stitch a million wounds.
The Philly Pigeon started 14 years ago as an effort to give Philly a bigger, better stage for competition slam poetry. Originally, the competition was the heart of the series, but over time, the Philly Pigeon began investing in the potential of performance poetry more broadly, hosting occasional funded retreats for poets, and at the end of each slam season, hosted an annual multimedia poetry performance. Jacob says doing virtual competitions in 2020 pushed them away from slam altogether.
I remember the moment after the last slam of Zoom where we announced the winner, which is normally in person, is this big culminating moment and they get a standing ovation and we get to feel really good as a team. Like, we did it. We did a whole season and we, like, announced the winner and you just, like, saw a bunch of faces on Zoom and, like, just immediately I just felt so depleted. And I was like, I'm never doing another Zoom event again.
After the worst of the pandemic had passed and people started feeling safe to gather again, Jacob says the Philly Pigeon team started to think about ways to transform the event. Kai says a key part of that was moving away from the idea of competition.
We were like, what's the payoff, really? Like, people get really stressed out. People have to compete. They compromise their artistic integrity, and they're really drained by the end. And then at these competitions, you don't win anything except the right to be like, I won this thing. And, like, that's really not good enough for all of the work that folks are putting in.
So, working with other poets in the community, they leaned into doing more multimedia productions. Jacob says that laid the groundwork for what you now see at the latest poetry show. Each show hosts a featured reader for an interview and a performance that blends visuals, music, and theater, making for a unique and compelling series that demonstrates the dynamic potential of performance poetry.
Humbly cradled Jake's new baby with the smile my family gave me, prostrate for the faith that saved me. It does not cease to amaze me that the state has not yet claimed me.
You know, Philly's spoken word scene, a lot of it comes out of the Black Lily, where the Roots were the house band, and people like Jill Scott, you know, her Long Walk song was a poem first. And like, Philly has a really rich history of incorporating music and theater and dance and poetry all together. And so it's just been really cool to see people working with musicians, people working with lighting, with visuals, and just seeing the art form come back to like its interdisciplinary home, which I think, you know, is how poetry, if you like think about poetry as something that we've been practicing for a millennia, that's how it's always been. It's always incorporated music and other elements.
Yeah, because I mean, I think a lot of the time poets don't even have the opportunity to even imagine what they would do with the tools that we have at Philomoca. For a lot of folks, especially folks that are mostly local, that's not an option. So to have the option and then to be able to work with the poets who maybe don't have an idea about what they want to do, but we can like generate that together. So it's also been super collaborative, and it's almost started to like create this sort of coherent cultural poetic aesthetic that happens like almost only at the Philly Pigeon, which is really amazing. And I feel like our community has become even more enmeshed with one another because of how that collaboration is encouraged through the latest poetry show.
As the Pigeon evolved, they began applying for grants to fund the production of the series, and for the last several years had a grant that funded events that were majority led by people of color. But several months ago, the grant was cut, and the Philly Pigeon was left to crowdfund for their next season.
We're small, like we only had one grant, so if we lose one grant, it's a really big deal.
Jacob and Kai shared how this is a reflection of the times, as funding cuts are hitting systemically marginalized communities the hardest.
Coming out of 2020 and like the Black Lives Matter uprisings, we saw a lot of institutions and funders and organizations making commitments and following through on those commitments. And now here we are in 2025 and we see a lot of folks winding down those commitments.
If something, you know, has the words diversity, equity, or inclusion or justice in it, there's a lot more federal pressure to eliminate that. And some folks have given into changing up the language in ways that intentionally or unintentionally further marginalized people and artists applying for this funding. And some folks are just like, we're not going to acquiesce to whatever this administration wants us to do. And they're also losing funding. So either way, people are trying to survive this weird moment.
So that I won't be no country's fool. F*** your flag and f*** that song. F*** the White House and its terror and its early light of dawn. I really must be moving on.
We also used to do this for free for many years before it became as labor intensive it is now. Like when it was a slam, it was just like, we booked a featured performer, they came and performed, and we had an open mic. Now we're producing like a mini theatrical production every month. And so that takes a tremendous amount of Kai's effort, making visuals, meeting with the poets, helping them incorporate different elements, prep time for the interviews, documenting it. So just the labor has increased a lot. And so we need to pay ourselves and the artists we're working with to do this work well.
Thanks to the responsiveness of their community, the Philly Pigeon crowdfunded $9,000 by their target deadline so they could run their current season. And the Philly Pigeon team has plenty of ideas and hope for future seasons, too.
The idea of what could happen with the Pigeon as we continue to learn and grow from our past experiences and just become more resourced, like, that's what I'm most excited about, to see what could happen, what the artists have in mind for what the Pigeon could look like.
Yeah, we do a lot with a little, and I'd like to do a lot with a lot.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what I'm trying to say. Yeah.
If you want to check out the Philly Pigeon, their next show is Friday, December 5th at Philomoca.
As we heard in Kennedy's story earlier, one way to take care of your mental health is to spend time outdoors, doing things like tending to a garden or taking a walk in a park.
While Philadelphia is an urban city, there are green spaces throughout the region, if you know where to look for them. Block by Block reporter Winter Schneider brings us this story about a West Philly native working to help inspire people to connect with nature wherever they can find it.
I've been thinking a lot about something that Haddington Woods Forest Steward Anthony Bastian told me when we spoke earlier this fall. If a disconnection from nature is at the root of some of our society's deepest and most pervasive issues, then reconnection with nature is the remedy. So how do we foster connections between people and nature in our communities? There's no single answer, but Nathan McWilliams says there's a lot of different ways to do it. Nathan is founder and lead consultant of Tree and Me LLC, which provides land care management services, but also environmental education and youth mentorship programs, including tours of Haddington Woods. Nathan says there's a lot you can learn when you actually step into the woods.
I just didn't want to turn it into just a walk. I wanted to turn it into an educational idea where people learn about plants, trees, shrubs, and the nature that inhabit that particular area. Because I could just give them all the answers, but I actually want to get them engaged with their natural world, get them touching things, the leaf textures and the soil, and getting them to really get engaged and interested in what they're doing and how they're doing it.
Nathan is a West Philly native who studied environmental science and marine estuary sciences at University of Maryland Eastern Shore. His love for nature and teaching people how to connect with it is pivotal to who he is and to what he does.
One of the basic principles of Tree and Me is to connect people back to nature by any means necessary. The center of my business is mentorship, the idea of land care management, sustainability, and overall, just the education aspect of it, getting people excited about what they're learning, what's in their own backyard, and how they can bring that particular part that they learned today back to the house or their community.
You can hear how much Nathan loves nature when he talks about some of his favorite plants.
I'm a really big fan of brown-eyed Susans. I don't know, you see a field of those, it just instantly makes me feel good. I love sunflowers. I love anything in the family Asteraceae that just covers all the big guys you see, the big sunflowers, coneflowers. Bergamot is one of my favorites. It's purple. That was my mom's favorite color. So I just love those native flowers there.
If connecting with nature is a remedy for healthy growth at all scales, then youth mentorship is the key ingredient of that remedy. On the day I sat down with Nathan to interview him, we met up in the neighborhood at an abandoned garden on Paris Street that he is working on restoring as a way to inspire stewardship in the next generation.
One of the biggest things I want to do is, besides connecting the community back to a space like this, is just getting the interest of the kids and just telling them that there's another alternative way for them to make it. And that's just one garden bed at a time. I think they get really excited, especially when they see like a watermelon, when they see strawberries. They're like, we can grow this in Philadelphia? Absolutely. You know, it just takes a little bit more love, a little bit more TLC, and just the education. This has been an abandoned garden for at least 10 or 12 years. And I just wanted to utilize my business and my resources to kind of bring this place back up to its original order.
Nathan says that bringing together volunteers to help transform an abandoned garden from an eyesore into a thriving community green space can help people understand what's possible.
So I think when people come into this space, they feel like they're making a contribution to their own community in a different way. And the more energy and effort they put into it, the more fruitful it will become to feed the next generation of leaders, the next generation of kids that's interested in doing the same thing they're doing. And then I want the idea is for them to take it home. I think sometimes it's just showing people that, you know what, this is something I never heard of before, this is something I've never done before, but this is really important. And I can create my own garden at home. And you know what, I can exchange ideas, I can exchange seeds with people, I can exchange plants. And that just gets you to a new level of community by expanding yours with the information that you gain from just this one garden. Once they see that it's possible, I think sky's become the limit.
As Nathan sat facing me, I kept noticing the Tree and Me logo on the shirt he was wearing.
It's a hand with a tree growing out of it because that's a part of who you are. It's also a book at the bottom of it because it starts with education. The symbol of what a tree is, it's the life symbol. And I think there's a little bit of life that's worth spreading in every single one, not just your soul, but more so like something that can grow inside you. It can be an idea, a dream, a concept, and all it needs is nourishment, water, and energy. So I just love the idea of everybody having that seed in them, even if they like it or not, and they have the ability to grow and become anything they want to do. I just wanted to bring that all in together. So tree and me. Ultimately, my goal is to get people connected in some way, shape, or form, even if it's not a trail, even if it's not a garden, but they just met another like-minded person like themselves that showed them something great, and they can teach the next person that.
You can find more information about Nathan and Tree in Me by visiting treeinmellc.com. That's also where you can register for upcoming Walk on the Wild Side nature tours in Haddington Woods. I'd like to thank Nathan for taking the time to speak with me, and special thanks to Philly-based forager Lady Dani Morinich for connecting me with Nathan. For Block by Block, I'm Winter Schneider.
Block by Block is produced by Angie Bacha, Ivan Felder III, Kalisa Hamid, Helen Horseman Allen, Amanda Johnson, Samantha Roll, Winter Schneider, Campbell Simmons, and us.
Vanessa Lowe.
And Kennedy Scurry. Helen Horseman Allen is our board operator tonight.
Brad Linder is Radio News Managing Editor at WPPM. Peter Liu is Radio Operations Manager. And Allison Durham is WPPM's Radio Program Manager.
We'll be back in 2 weeks with a new episode of Block by Block featuring more stories about issues affecting life in the Philly region. And you can find past episodes of the show on PhillyCam SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever else you find your podcast.
Thanks for listening. What a cool episode.
Yes, that was so amazing.
Kennedy, I wanted to ask you, because that last story really got to me. Where do you find the joy of nature in Philly?
So I find the joy of nature within parks. I don't know why I'm a fan of parks. I just love being there. I love the dogs. I love the air. And I love the way the sun hits me. So I also enjoy nature a lot when it becomes warmer. And I love touching grass. I love walking through the grass, sitting in grass, things like that, especially like with friends if we have like a little outing. So yeah, that's nice. What I love about nature. How about nice. You?
For me, it's the Wissahickon. Yes. There's a lovely restaurant called Valley Green Inn that I like to go to, and then I like to walk along that path there. So yeah, we've got some good stuff in Philly.
We do.
I really appreciate it.
I think you guys need to take a time out to appreciate our grasses, our trees,
and our parks.
Sun, and our parks. Yeah. Especially during the fall. I feel like Philly has a great skyline in the fall. You know, go to Belmont Avenue Park as well. I don't know if you guys been to Belmont Park. Yes, yes, mm-hmm, yes. Mm-hmm. Make sure you look at the city skyline as well. Just wanted to put that out there. If we're talking about nature and how we view Philly, just wanted to put that out there. But yeah, that's it for me, guys.
There you go. There you go. Thanks again for all of you who joined us.